From the Ponds to the Pros, it's time for Beyond the Pond on the Fan. Here are your hosts, Pat Micheletti and Kevin Faulness.
Let's talk hockey!
Well, you talk about big shoes to fill. You're going to fill in for Pat Micheletti? Are you kidding me?
Can we get a new voice over? Like Brett, you couldn't have taken care of that? You've had 3-4 days notice.
We could have used a new open, Brett. No Pat Micheletti. No, it's Michael Russo. Michael Russo jumping into those big shoes, and we're going to, or big skates maybe in this case, and we're going to talk a little hockey from now until 12:45-ish. It's going up to the network pregame. A puck drops around 1 o'clock. Wild hosting the St. Louis Blues. Michael, we call this a Central Division collision.
Yeah, Central Division collision. Hopefully it goes better for the Wild. The Wild have lost five of their last six meetings against the Blues, and obviously a real tough shootout loss last week in St. Louis. But has largely been playing really, really well since the All-Star break. But it just seems like, you know, that for some bizarre reason, whenever they get that point where they need that huge win to really elevate their status and get themselves in a secure, more secure area to fight for this last playoff position, they have a game like the LA Kings. And it wasn't Nashville. Like, when they went to Nashville, that was a game they really totally no-showed. This game the other night was a bizarre game. Like, they worked hard. There were some bad bounces. But what I liked about John Hines' reaction yesterday is he was not just saying, hey, we played great and just we had three pucks hit the post and three pucks in off our own guys.
Yeah.
He sat there and he said, look, there's certain things that we did to get ourselves in those positions that need to be better. And this is a huge homestand here, especially a big game tonight, today, as you said, Kevin, because they don't play the next 4 days. So just optically in the standings, you know, with Vegas having three more games to the Wild's one, this is just an important, important game tonight.
As I look at it, do you think 96 points gets you in?
I think that is probably the threshold, right? Vegas is on pace for 96 points. I had this big debate with LaPanta the other day about pace. Right now, Vegas has a tough, tough schedule coming up after today's game. But I think 96 is probably the number that you have to get to, which puts the Wild in a position where they've got no room for error.
They basically have to win 10 to 12.
Yeah.
You know, because they need 20 points. They're at 76. To get to 96, you need 10 wins. You need 20 points, and that's very difficult, to say the least. Is it impossible? No. Is it improbable? Probably. But, you know, the unfortunate part about the game in Los Angeles is they actually started the game decent, mm-hmm. but then the wheels came off, and that's it was hard for them to respond.
Yeah, it started with a tough icing by Ryan Hartman, and then the turnover, and then, you know, penalty kill again. LA just had total possession. Kopitar was just outstanding. That was going to be a tough game without Eriksson Ek and Brodin. The good news is that Eriksson Ek is getting close. We'll see if he plays today. He wasn't in line rushes yesterday, but as John Hines pointed out, if he comes into the lineup today, they know exactly where he's going to be put, and he knows exactly how to play. And then obviously Brodin, I thought the real good news and reassuring news yesterday is that they've gotten some good news, and that John said that in short order he'd be back. But to play without Brodin and Eriksson Ek for an extended stretch, that would be very, very difficult.
What did you think of the Killorn hit on Brodin?
I thought it was a dirty play. I will be honest. I've talked to people around the organization that actually just thought it was a hockey play, right? Mm-hmm. I just thought that Killorn is playing like a frustrated hockey player lately. Like, you know, I go back, my context for how cheap I said the play was in that tweet was I've been watching Anaheim play a lot lately, and he had a couple of dirty plays in my eyes last week in a game that they played out east. And then remember the game here in Minnesota, he can-openered Hartman and sent him toppling over on the upper back, which could have been dangerous. And then even the game with the Brodin, he took a run at Brodin earlier in the game. He took a run at Faber earlier in the game and whiffed. And I just think he, you know, playing in Anaheim is worn on a guy that has won a lot of hockey games in his career playing in Tampa Bay, and he's just fed up.
Yeah.
And, in that sequence, to me, he went back at Brodin for no reason and then basically slammed him on the ice. But if, you know, that's a play that happens a lot, and if Brodin's not hurt, we don't even think anything of it, right? Other than, Killorn's playing frustrated, but he got hurt. Luckily, it's not a catastrophic injury that he's got to deal with here. When I saw it at first, you're thinking, oh man, torn ACL, you're looking at the month being March, and you're starting to think to getting a next season could be tough. But it's definitely not major, so that's good news.
That is good news because you need all hands on deck. Like I said, is it possible? Yes. It won't be easy. And to miss guys like that, like a Jonas Brodin, a Joel Eriksson-Ek, who very well could be in the lineup today against the St. Louis Blues, that would certainly help. We've got an action-packed show here, despite no Pat Micheletti, who Pat will join us in the next, probably the next 15, 20 minutes or something like that. He was up in Bemidji State calling the championship game in the CCHA, and unfortunately, Tom Cerutori and his Beavers fall short. We're also going to check in with Matt Hendricks, Wild player development. What's going on that side of things? Some of the young guns in the organization. He's had face-to-face talks with a lot of them, so it'll be good to find out what's going on with Hendricks, the former Blaine Bengal. We've got Elliot Friedman joining us, too, at about 11:35 is the plan for him. There's a lot of voices that I love in and around our sport. He's the top of the heap for me. I don't know what you think, Russo, but yeah. I love listening to this guy. And when he talks, people listen.
Yeah, absolutely. He is as plugged in an insider as there is in the National Hockey League. He works his butt off. I just spent 3-4 days with him in South Florida. And if you think that I have my phone pasted to me all the time, you should see this guy. I mean, let's put it this way. If I text him and he doesn't write me back right away, I know he's just ignoring it because he always has his phone in hand. And he is, he's again, you just see the respect level that all the GMs have. That's why I like going there because for me, it's almost more networking, right? Continue to get, you know, establish relationships with the general managers. But you see how much that he is respected and how much he knows. It's really impressive to watch firsthand.
Speaking of respected, let's go to the lines and get our first caller out of the way. His name is The Moose. It is Marcus Foligno. Marcus, Kevin Faulness, Michael Russo as well. Welcome to Beyond the Pond, and thanks for joining us on a game day.
Hey, guys, no problem. Hope you're doing well.
Not only a game day, but, I mean, you guys are going to drop the puck here in 10, 11, 12, just a handful of hours. It's a Central Division collision. Expectations here with, two incredibly valuable points on the line.
Yeah, got my coffee in my car right now, headed to the rink. So it's game time. It's exciting day. Obviously a big game ahead of us. But we're all excited, ready to get to the rink and get ready to face the Blues, and we'll be up for this one.
I'm disappointed that you have a coffee, Marcus, because I asked Faulness about 20 minutes ago if I could text you and ask for a venti Americano, and he asked absolutely not. I figured you could deliver me a coffee. You know, I'm always curious, Marcus, especially for a combatant like you, like, what's it like driving to a game, taking a bus to a game, knowing that, you know, especially with two huge points on the line, as physical as you are, as much as this team, you know, that you're facing today has beaten you in the last couple years. I mean, are there nerves? Like, what is the anticipation when you come into a game like today and you know that how important that you are going to have to probably be to establish some sort of physical presence?
Yeah, I mean, there's always nerves going into every game. I think it's just excitement. Excitement to, you don't know what to expect, right? I think that's what I like to just kind of go into games is to be prepared as possible as I can as an individual. Don't worry about my game. But there's a lot of things that you have to do with it, you know, instincts, what comes at you in the game, and that's something that you really can't predict in a car ride there. So that's what makes you nervous, and that's what makes you get that warm, tingly feeling inside of this excitement of the game and what these games mean down the stretch. So, we know it's a huge game tonight. You got to bring my A game and definitely, be a leader in the room where we can push through a team that's had our number in the past, like you said, and come out with a really, really big win here and keep propelling ourselves in the standings.
We got Wild forward Marcus Foligno on the line listening to Beyond the Pond. I was looking, Marcus, you're closing in on 800 games in the National Hockey League. Today will be game number 798. Does it feel like it?
If you ask my body a little bit, it's just one of those things, though. I don't feel like it. I've been in the league this long. It's wild. I mean, it goes by quick, but at the same time, too, I just every day you wake up, you're excited to play the game, and I think that's all that matters. So, game 800, it feels like still in the early part of my career, and I'm blessed to be able to play this long and play this many games, but hopefully 800 will be in the rearview mirror pretty soon and just keep pushing forward. But, it's just so crazy to think that I've eaten up that many games.
Yeah, Marcus, you mentioned how your body has probably taken the biggest beating in that 800 games. What has this season been like for you? Because, you know, really you were in the midst of a really terrific start to the season, bounce back year, if you want to call it. And then you got hurt. And I know that you've been dealing with this, you know, lingering injury for a while now. How hard has it been to play through it? And, you know, is this something that right now even you could probably say that you're trying to gut through it and that you might need some you know, off season to really repair yourself in time for next season?
Yeah, I think to make it, you know, have a long career, you got to play through some injuries. Unfortunately, you know, going through that again and was tough. I felt really good about my game and still feel good about it. But when you get kind of a bump in the road, you get taken out of the lineup and, you know, it takes a little bit of games to get going again and find that where I was kind of rolling before that. So it's frustrating. I mean, it definitely is. And then, you know, just to add insult to the wound, is, you know, the time of year you get taken out is probably the most crucial time of the year to rack up points and help your team win. So I wasn't able to be a part of it. And but now I'm back, able to rehab. And you know, it's not perfect, but it's good enough to play. And something that I know I can. I'm never going to put myself in a position where if I'm hurting the team or hurting myself, that I wouldn't be out there. So I feel good enough now, and, you know, just you got to grind. You got to get through some injuries to play a long time in this career, and especially this time of the season. You know, everyone's some way should perform in the playoffs and playing through something. So, you know, that whole no excuses mentality is kind of what you got to take with it right now, and you know, just try to play my best and help our team win down the stretch here.
Let me ask you about one of your teammates real quick before we get you on the road here and ready for the Wild and Blues today. Again, puck drops at 1 o'clock. We're going to have Matt Hendricks on to talk about prospects in general and some of the younger faces in this organization. But one of those newer faces on your team now, and Murat Hustandinov. Today will be his fifth game in the National Hockey League. Early impressions of the young man making his way over here from Russia.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. I'm really impressed with just, like, you know, the 200-foot game that he brings. You know, I think, you know, game one, he was game two, just trying to feel things out. And I think the last two games, you know, you see some of the, he's taking the puck, he's holding on to it a little bit longer now. And I think that's just from confidence and understanding how this game's played over here. So, you know, he's fast. I think the aggressiveness, the intensity he plays with is something that is the most exciting part. You know, you can teach a lot of how to finish in this league, the offensive side. That those are the skills that you can always work on. But It's the attitude, the competitive nature that him, like Kirill, kind of brought over here. So that's what makes me most excited about him, and that's something that if you have that, then you can go a long way in this league and be a big part of this team. So, and then on top of that, just another humbled guy coming over from Russia, smiling like Kirill when you get him going, and he's been great addition to our team so far.
Next week in The Athletic, Marcus, is going to be Brock Faber Mania. We're going to have three stories on him, one making the case for the Calder. The other is myself and our Chicago writer putting on our Homer hats and making the case for the Calder for Bedard versus Faber. Then looking at Faber's next contract will be the third story, which will be, quote, expensive. You're in the unique position where hockey Twitter right now between Wild and Blackhawks fans are just absolutely rabid with just debates on who's the better Calder contender. And you're in the unique position where your brother is essentially his babysitter. Does he tell you about Connor Bedard? And do you have those debates with him? Like, who's the better Calder contender this year? Like, if you had a vote, who would you vote for?
It's tough. I mean, well, first of all, Nick praises a lot about what Connor Bedard does for that team, and just who he is as a person. You know, he's so young still, like Brock. Obviously a little bit younger, and but at the same time, I mean, he possesses a lot of professionalism, and his work ethic, I think, is what Nick really sees out of Connor, is just the way he treats his body and what he does on a daily routine. You know, how serious he takes his craft. And I think that's the biggest comment that you can give to a young guy coming to this league, because it's not always like that for most cases. So he seems a little bit ahead of the times, and you know, takes production very serious too. And you know, I'm biased. You know, I think that it's Brock is, you know, had to work his way up into some of the ranks and get this ice time that he's deserved, and where maybe Connor Bedard was given it right away, and then that goes into with the points and everything. But I think for the most part, one's obviously, I don't want to say the color comes down to points, but mm-hmm. Brock will keep getting them, I'm sure, and as long as Connor maybe can stay within distance, we'll see. But I'm a big believer that, what Brock's done with our team has been really special, and I'll be the first one to say it. If it wasn't for a guy like that to blossom early in the season, I mean, we might have been lost a little bit more, with points out of the playoff spot. I mean, he's definitely had some unbelievable games, unbelievable impacts on us, and just taking on a lot of the load. I mean, you get rid of a guy like Dumbs last year, you bring in Brock, that's to kind of fill that role, and I mean, he's taken it and ran with it. So it's been really impressive to watch. And on top of that, the type of person he is off the ice. I mean, one of the better younger guys I've had the pleasure of playing with. I've said this before, where he's going to be a leader and a guy that just people in Minnesota want to be like because of the connection that he has here. And, he's humbled at the same time, but he's excited to be a Minnesota Wild player for sure.
Good stuff, Marcus. Thanks for doing this on a game day. Travel safe, and we'll see you on the ice this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep, good luck today.
Wild forward Marcus Foligno making his way to XL Energy Center because the Wild are on the ice for a 108 puck drop this afternoon as they take on the St. Louis Blues, two incredibly critical points on the line for both teams. I mean, it's not only big for the Wild, it's equally as big for the St. Louis Blues because both teams right now are on the outside looking in of the playoff hunt in the Western Conference. And you guys bring up a good topic. The Bedard versus Faber thing is something that's been boiling all year long.
Yeah.
And it felt like Faber eclipsed him once Bedard went out of the lineup with that fractured jaw. But the difference is, and I know that this is the chosen one in Connor Bedard, and he's the guy that's going to win it. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But what Faber does for this team compared to what Bedard does for that team, that's a team that's not going anywhere near the playoffs. He's mm-hmm. just having points tonight, and he plays on one end of the ice, whereas Faber is a full rink kind of guy. He's a playing top pair of minutes without Jared Spurgeon and for chunks of the season without Jonas Brodin. So you can't tell me the impact that Bedard is having on that team is greater than what Faber's doing for Minnesota.
Yeah, Bedard's going to win the Calder, but Faber's season has been absolutely extraordinary. And if this was probably any other year, like if this is last year and Connor Bedard's not in it, Faber walks away with the trophy because his year has been so much more impressive than Matty Beniers last year. But he's played meaningful games from the second the season started, where Connor Bedard hasn't had to. Plus, as you said, he plays half the ice. He's minus 38. Yeah, on a team that doesn't have like minus 30s everywhere. Yeah. I mean, they're 4 or 5. There's only two players worse than his minus 38 in the NHL, and one's his line mate, in Kurashev. But again, he's a dynamic, dynamic player. But what Faber has done this season with Jared, in the context of Jared Spurgeon being out for everything but 16 games, for Jonas Brodin missing one long chunk in December, and then obviously and January, and then obviously out now. It's remarkable. And for somebody that didn't really put up a lot of points in college, play the power play at all, just imagine in those first 19 games under Dean Evason, if he'd gotten a sniff of power play time, he had none.
Right.
It was John Hines moved him to the number one unit probably 5 or 6 games maybe into his tenure. So we're talking like mid-December, early December that he really got on the power play at first. And if points is a reason, a prerequisite to win the Calder, he'd have a lot more right now, be right on par with the Siders and the Quinn Hugheses that have won it. Cale Makar.
All right. Well, that's the voice of Michael Russo of The Athletic and TheAthletic.com. He's in for Pat Micheletti. It's Beyond the Pond. We do a 10 to noon every Saturday morning on KFAN. We're going to squeeze in that first break, and when we continue, Micheletti finally responded to one of my texts. He says he's driving, so we'll give him a pass for that. But there's a good chance he'll answer his phone on the other side of break. That'll be our good opportunity to talk a little college hockey this morning, because he's the guy that's done it all, seen it all. So we'll do that next. If you want to get involved, 800-320-5326. You can also text us, 646-86. It's Beyond the Pond. Russo in for Micheletti on The Fan. Beyond the Pond continues. Kevin Faulness along with Michael Russo, because the great Pat Micheletti out chasing a dollar once again. This time up in Bemidji, and unfortunately, the Beavers fall short. They lose to Michigan Tech in the CCHA tournament. That means the Beavers have been eliminated from postseason contention. Right there with all the play-by-play action, Pat Micheletti and Ben Holden. How was it last night there, Patrick?
It was a terrific atmosphere, one of the nicest college arenas that I've been into. Michigan, it was a hard game, a tight game, but Michigan Tech, unfortunately, for the Beavers, comes out on top.
Before Michael jumps in here, going up there at least, your compatriot there, the play-by-play guy, was doing Twitter feeds of your drive up to Bemidji. Are you two driving together home as well?
He's sitting right next to me. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, he bugs me more than you do, Kevin.
Well, that's awesome. I'm sure you guys had a blast.
And Ben is one of the best play-by-play guys in college hockey. And we had fun. Yeah, it was a good game, a hard game, you know, and an elimination game. It's always tough for the seniors playing their last game.
Is that why you're cranky today? Brett has informed us.
I'm not cranky. I'm never cranky. I get cranky when fallness tracks me down.
That's true. That's like all of us.
To be the Michael Russo and Kevin Fallness show.
Listen
today.
To me. Listen
not,
to me. Let me just say,
Micheletti.
This isn't me tracking you down. This is
Michael,
your show.
Thank you for filling in today.
No problem. Chad Abbott tell you what happened when I texted him?
And you didn't tell Kevin I had to pay you double, right?
No. Chad Abbott, I texted him from the Michigan Gophers game last week, and I said, hey, I think you were on the text, Fallness.
I said,
hey, Pat said that he has a conflict next week and can't do it, so he said that I can if you need me. And he replied, is there any other programming ideas that Pat needs has for me?
You know what's funny? I saw him in the grocery store the next day. He says, what else are you programming? I knew you were going to do that. I knew it. Yeah. But, hey, I did a pretty good job, though, didn't I?
Yeah, no, you got me in here, so I appreciate it, Pat.
I got you in there.
Today, after the Wild game here at Xcel Energy Center, obviously is the Frozen Faceoff NCHC Frozen Faceoff Championship between Omaha versus DU. I don't know if you got, I'm sure you didn't get a chance to really watch any of that DU St. Cloud State game yesterday, but just a fabulous, exciting hockey game. And obviously DU was able to pull it out in overtime. What do you think of tonight's matchup, and you know, who do you see lifting this hardware at the end of the game?
Yeah, it was heartbreaking, obviously, for St. Cloud because they had to win the tournament to get the qualifier to get in the NCAA. Listen, Omaha's playing as good as anybody in the country, and I think we'll find out tomorrow. But it would be my guess that will be the opponent for the Minnesota Gophers in Sioux Falls. With North Dakota losing, that takes them out of a number one seed. And out of Sioux Falls, so you know I think Denver is one of those teams that we don't really talk a lot about during the season, but they are as talented as any team in the country. Unfortunately, they give up a lot of goals, but their forward group, their D group, which I hope the Wild take a good look at in the BM kid, really good. So I think Denver will probably win, and I think you'll see the Gophers in Omaha play each other next week in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, those are a couple of costly losses yesterday in the NCHC. With North Dakota losing, like you say, they probably lose their number one seed.
They are no longer a number one seed, and regardless of what happens today, they will be a number two seed. Along with the Gophers, who will be a two seed, and that was a costly loss for them last night. And Michigan State has locked themselves in, to a number one seed now, regardless of what happens. So there's two teams left to qualify, and Colorado College is waiting to see what happens, and UMass is also on that bubble. So it all depends who wins tonight, and their fate will be determined.
Yeah, so basically what I'm looking at, 15 of the 16 seeds are locked up for the NCAA tournament. Like you said, there's one still hanging out there. It's crazy how things came together here over the last even just 24 hours.
Yeah, it's been crazy. And I tell you what, the selection committee would have had a real difficult time had it turned the other way last night, because then you potentially would have had teams from the same league playing each other, which we never, ever see. But I think with Omaha beating North Dakota last night, that changed things up. And so, you know, we'll have to wait and see how it shakes out tomorrow.
Jack Peart has a decision to make, Pat. Obviously, second-round pick of the Minnesota Wild. He can go back for a senior season or sign his entry-level contract. I think the Wild will obviously want to sign him, and I think the Jack is interested in signing up now for a contract that likely starts next season. Obviously, like Brock Faber, wasn't a big point producer in college, but had a couple really quality years in a row, second-team all-conference. What do you think his future is? What do you think the strength of his game is?
Man, you know, he's going to have to, I think, to make it, Michael, I think he's going to have to improve his offensive game, and I think he can do that, you know, playing a couple years down in Iowa. He's really, really talented, and he's really, really smart. He didn't have a great year, but when you look at the whole, you know, season for St. Cloud, it was up, it was down, and he kind of went as the team went.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's really, really talented, really good kid. And I think, you know, we look at guys sometimes and you say, well, maybe he needs another year. I think it's time for Jack to take that next step into the pro game. And, you know, he's awfully talented. But, you know, Michael, as well as anybody, you better do something really, really good if you're going to make it at the next level. And, you know, he's sound defensively. He's a good puck mover. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world. So I think if he can improve his offensive side, offensive ability, I think he'll have a chance.
How about your Golden Gophers, Patrick? Of course, they're off this week. They're getting ready for the NCAA tournament. Like you said, there's a good chance they'll be matched up against Nebraska, Omaha, quite possibly next week or whenever this thing gets going. What did you think about how things went for them against Michigan in the Big Ten tournament? What do you think about their postseason hopes?
Well, I'm a little worried about them, to be quite honest. I thought they would have a better effort than they did against Michigan, you know, and having a chance to get back to the Big Ten championship game. Listen, Minnesota is deep, you know, 1-4. They've got a lot of depth. They don't have that dynamic defenseman that they had a year ago with Faber and Lacombe and Johnson. So they have to win a different way, and they have to grind it out and you know, play, you know, awfully hard for 60 minutes. They've had lapses. Do I think they're capable of doing it? No question. But, you know, you just got to, you know, hope that team shows up next weekend.
Pat, do you think Charlie Strammel needs to execute his portal privileges in a week or two whenever Wisconsin is ousted and get the heck out of there?
You know what? It hasn't been a couple very good years for him. He's talented. There's no question about it. And so you're just kind of waiting for him to hit his stride, and he's young. He's young still, and so you don't want to really give up on him because he hasn't had the success in the first 2 years. You would hope that he would have done that, but let's not forget he's a big kid. He's probably still growing into his body. He still probably has a lot to learn about the game. And, it, you know, maybe a fresh start will be good for him, or, you know, just maybe a summer of getting bigger and stronger and a little bit more mature is going to help him. But, you know, it's easy just to quit on a kid. You know, you're especially Wild fans who think, you know, the number one draft pick should be doing better. But, you know, I still think there's hope for him. And you know, maybe him and Mike Hastings will decide it's a better fit to move on. You know, we'll you know, see about that at the end of the year.
I think he should. What do you think? What do you? By the way, what do you get for Alex Micheletti for his birthday?
The ability to come over and watch hockey all day with me.
That'll be great. Well, what a present!
I was gone on his birthday. I sent him a text and wished him happy birthday and all of that.
You're very loving.
You know, I'm a busy guy, Michael.
Yeah,
I don't have time for my kids.
Yeah. Hey, do me a favor. Hand the phone over to Ben Holden, would you?
Yeah, I will. Ben, Kevin Faulness, and Michael Bruce.
Hey, guys.
You have to be rethinking life choices at this point. I mean, being in a car with Pat Micheletti going to the grocery store is one thing, but from the Twin Cities to Bemidji and then back after being on the air with him for 3 hours, Ben, how's it going?
It's going. I'll just put it this way. I got 40 minutes left.
Do you have earbuds?
tell me you're popping ibuprofen or something.
What's that?
I bet you're popping some Motrin or ibuprofen just to get rid of the headache.
No, I still smoke and I'm chewing my fingernails. I've had one cigarette since 7:30, so I'm going to probably chain smoke three before I go through security to get on my flight home, boys.
Hey, we just asked Pat about the game last night. Samford Center going to Bemidji, watching the Beavers unfortunately come up short against Michigan Tech. What'd you take away from the game?
I took away that, you know, these are two really good teams, and I felt, in all honesty, whoever won the game, guys, I'm not saying they're going to go to the Frozen Four and do what Bemidji did back in 09. And, you know, that was pretty awesome to call those games back then. But these are two hard, heavy physical teams, and they're not overly skilled by any means. But I think they're really good teams that can play and they can win. And with Pietola and Net, I think Michigan Tech's a team that if it's BU, if it's BC, they better be ready. Because we've seen it a lot, as you guys know, in college hockey, these older teams seem to have success when it comes time for the tournament. So hospitable, everybody was awesome. Tom Ceratori was fantastic. I hadn't seen him since that regional in 09. And just a great environment, great people, good to be around so many people that love our sport and love college hockey and just love the game. So it was a lot of fun, guys.
Ben, thanks for jumping on with us. I pray for your sanity. Good luck the final 40
Thank
minutes.
You.
And I'm guessing that next cigarette is going to be probably the best one of your life.
It's going to be right up there, boys. Always, hey, I enjoy both you guys and what you guys do. Thanks for letting me join you for a few, and I'll hand you back to Pat.
No, that's all right. That's fine.
All right.
Hi, Pat.
Did you hang up on me?
No, I'm about to. I was just going to say thanks for jumping on your own show, making time for your own show, but drive safe. Are you a guy that likes to push the limits? Are you going like at the speed? You strike me as a guy that's going about 56.
I drive the speed limit, and, you know, I take my time, and, you know, I got to get Ben to the airport though, so I might have to.
Are you a guy that when you're pulled? Bit. Are you a guy when you're pulled over? You're like, hey, here's my University of Minnesota hockey card.
Do you know who I am?
Have you seen my mural?
I know Kevin Faulness and Michael Russo. Can you cut me a break? Yeah.
Good luck with that.
You just show him a picture of your mural at Mariucci.
Right, hey, Michael, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it, and I know I owe you having to deal with Kevin.
All right.
For 2.5 hours.
All right.
Now
goodbye.
What I go through.
Yes. Drive safe. Wear your seatbelt. That is right. The voice
Thanks,
of one
guys.
Pat Micheletti. Tom Reed's in the building now. Michael Russo's here as well. We got to scramble to break. We got Matt Hendricks coming up next on Beyond the Pond. First hour of Beyond the Pond flying by. Again, we do have open phone lines, and we'll try to get to them as we can. 800-320-5326. You can also text 64686. Michael Russo and Kevin Faulness here on Beyond the Pond. And now it's our pleasure to be joined by Matt Hendricks, now the Assistant Director of Player Development for the Minnesota Wild, but a longtime NHLer and a guy who really needs no introduction in this community. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Hi, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Let's first and foremost, before we let's get beyond the pleasantries, tell me what the Assistant Director of Player Development for the Minnesota Wild means. For the fans out there that are listening, what are you doing these days, Matt Hendricks?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, it's quite a bit of travel these days, getting out, checking out our prospects, you know, trying to be a part of their careers, be a part of their lives, help them go, you know, get their feet going in the right direction. and help them. At the end of the day, it really is trying to help them reach their dreams of playing in the National Hockey League someday.
Yeah, Matty, I don't think that the average fan understands how much you and Bomber and Cody McLeod travel. I mean, it's basically like 3 weeks every month, you know, all, and not just to the, you know, you're not staying in JW Marriott's in Miami. You're going to, you know, bum you know where, Ontario and Quebec and obviously down to Des Moines and places like that. It's just a ton of travel. And I'm always curious from a player that played as many games as you did in the National Hockey League, and you first retire, sometimes you just want to chill and don't realize the amount of work that it does take. You really have to invest if you're going to, you know, have a post-career in hockey and be willing to travel and be away from your family. How tough was that decision to really fully invest into this new role post-career?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know what? I had some real good advice earlier in my career. I was fortunate enough to play with Mike Knuble for a few years in Washington, and we became close friends and such. And as his career ended and he stepped in and was working in Grand Rapids with Detroit's Farm Club, him and I would, you know, stay in contact about that stuff. And that was his advice for me. It was when I finally had to hang up the skates and if I wanted to stay involved in hockey to try to get my foot in the door right away. You know, he had learned from friends and other teammates of his that may have been a little bit older that the longer you stay away from it, the harder it is to get back in. So I took that advice, and I extremely fortunate to be able to step in my home state and work for my hometown team. And it was just an incredible opportunity for myself and my family.
Where are some of the spots that you've been? Obviously, the Wild have prospects all over the globe. I mean, that's not a stretch. Literally all over the globe. Where's some of the furthest reaches that you've gone thus far?
Well, obviously, North America, I think the furthest I've gone is to see Riley Hite play up in Prince George, British Columbia. That's quite a trip if no one's never been up there. That's a good spot. Early on, when we had Sean Boudreaux with our organization, I went up to Cape Breton. That's kind of a funny story, actually. I kind of took the job right at the beginning of the development camp, and him and I were talking, and I said, well, my goal is to get out and see every player. And he kind of looked at me funny and said, you're going to come to Cape Breton? And I said, yeah, what's the big deal? Well, I didn't realize at that point in my life that there's another time zone in North America that's outside of Massachusetts. So that was kind of an experience for me going out there. And then obviously the long trips, you know, to Europe and such. The furthest I've gone is to Astana in Kazakhstan to see Danila Yurov play. So that was quite the trip, too.
And you had to do that, obviously, Matty, because of, you know, you can't really travel into Russia right now as American citizens. What was that whole process like? Because I was shocked when I talked to Bomber before and after you guys signed Kuznetsov, but just how much contact that you guys have with Kuznetsov, with Yurov, with Firstov, some of these guys that you are entrenched in there in development just as much as you are with a lot of your North American prospects.
Oh, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, we've got a great scout over in Russia, in Moscow, Ivan Nepriev, and he has been tremendous to work with in regard to interpretations and emails and video clips and any type of information that we're trying to get into our prospects' hands over there. He has been a big part of. So that, in terms of communication, has been outstanding. And you know, with today's technologies, it's not too difficult to be able to watch these guys on a daily basis, which we feel we get a pretty good book on them, you know, just off the video work alone.
Well, let's talk about some of those guys in particular. You mentioned going to see Riley Hite. If my stats are correct, and say whatever you want about the WHL, or, I mean, piling up points in juniors, but 114 points in 65 games. That's unbelievable. When you talk about this Wild prospect, what do you got on your hands in Riley Hite?
Well, yeah, I know. I think he's, if my calculations are right, I think he's sitting third in the Western League, but, I mean, the third in the entire Canadian Hockey League, in the Junior League up there. It's just tremendous. And obviously he's playing on a very skilled team. You know, there's a number of guys on his team that are putting up points, but I think what we like most about Riley is he's really jumped in the driver's seat this year for Prince George. He is a driver for their team, plays in all situations, and he has a tenacity about him, kind of a chip on his shoulder. That's the way he plays. He may not be the biggest guy in the ice at times, but you know, the odds are in his favor of winning those one-on-one puck battles. So the work ethic is there. Obviously the skill, the gifted talents are there, but you know, for me, it's his drive. It's how hungry he is to be the best, and that should be exciting for everybody here in Minnesota.
Yeah, I can't wait to see him in development camp and then training camp, where I think he's very much, even though he's a teenager and has to either go back to juniors or make the Wild, I can see him getting a real long runway in training camp. We're talking with Matty Hendricks, the Wild's assistant director of player development. And Matty, one player that unfortunately maybe his college career ended last night is one of your former Huskies. And a real quality defenseman, second round pick, Jack Peart. What is the process now in when you talk to a player about maybe either, you know, leaving school or returning for his senior year? And regardless of that, where do you see him really excelling at the next level? He obviously wasn't a big point producer at the college level, but he's had a real couple quality years. We know that Brock Faber wasn't a great point producer as well. So where do you see the strength of his game lying and how that will translate at the professional level?
Yeah, well, and to answer your first question, you know, we're going to, out of respect to Jack and the tough way that their season ended last night, we'll just be patient with him and, mm-hmm. you know, let him go about making those decisions the way he and his representation or advisors choose. But in regards to his on-ice play, yeah, his numbers dipped a little bit this season, but there's a lot more to look at in a player's game than stats, which you guys all know. And the growth that he's shown on the defensive side of things has jumped off the page for us this year. He has begun to really, really trust his feet defensively. And if any of you guys saw the games last night, or to your listeners that saw his ability to battle in corners and to hold his ground net front, those are the things that will allow him to find some success at the next level. And then in terms of his gifted talents, his ability to go back on pucks, and he seems to know where his outs are. And when I say his outs, where his teammates are and how to manipulate the chessboard in a way where he can open up passing lanes, and he passes like a pro already. He zips pucks up and takes those options and does it at a quick pace where he's not turning pucks back and allowing the opposition to pressure him. So those are things that you look at for defensemen moving up to the next level, and he has that. And the offensive numbers, we think he'll rebound from that eventually, but Jack is a tremendous player in terms of the way he sees the game, thinks the game, and plays the game. He's come a long way in a few years.
Matty, the young D has been something that we've talked a lot about in the last couple of years, just because they're the ones that have all turned pro in Iowa. The Damon Hunts, the Carson Lamboses, the Ryan O'Rourke, Simon Johansson, Kyle Masters, David Spachek, players like that. Now Jack hopefully will eventually get into that mix. Where are their developments coming right now in Iowa? And you know, who I know, is there a rung of the ladder? I mean, obviously, Wild fans have gotten to see Damon Hunt really perform pretty well and poised at the NHL level this year.
Right. Well, and not to really compare the individuals, you know, Damon's been there a little bit longer, and I think in terms of physical maturity, he's above the other players that we have down there right now, and he's a horse. I mean, the guy could play 25 minutes right now if you wanted him to in the American Hockey League, and he's done a great job coming up here and playing in more of a limited role. So, you know, you give credit to him in terms of the way that he can view a game and play a game. Some guys have a difficult time when you start cutting minutes, right? And then in regards to the younger guys, I kind of use this description, drinking from a fire hose, because for the listeners that don't really necessarily understand the American Hockey League and what it's all about, I can tell you first and foremost, having experienced it as a player myself, it's a very, very good hockey league. And I'd go on record saying it's the second best league in the world. So it's not
an easy feat for a young player stepping into that arena at, you know, 20 years old. It's a lot different than, you know, college hockey, junior hockey. You're playing against men that have been around the block a few times, and you're playing against players that have big ambitions of building an NHL career eventually. So our guys are, you know, we're remaining very patient with them, and they've all started to grow in different areas on the ice, whether it's defensive zone, whether it's finding a little bit of offense, penalty killing. Their game has been trending upwards this year, and those are the signs that we like to see.
Along those same lines, Hendy, I've been asked this question. I don't know the answer. The KHL compared to the AHL compared to the National Hockey League. How big of a jump is it for Murat Hustandinov, for example, to make the jump from, and again, there's a lot of things that go into it off the ice as well, but just strictly the hockey itself, KHL versus the NHL, how big of a leap is that?
Well, it's, you know, for me, not having never played over in that league, but having watched it, it's a big jump. And it really is kind of a wow moment for all of us watching Murat come over and, you know, having his limited English and difficulty understanding, you know, explanations on systems and stuff. But what we know about Murat and what we really appreciate about him is he's played a lot of big moment hockey in his career, whether it's World Juniors, whether it's, you know, big time playoff games in the KHL. He's been a leader, worn a letter everywhere he's been, and he is just, in terms of his on-ice abilities, he adds a speed element to our team, which we know we need and we know we love, and he is just such a responsible and detailed centerman. And I guess the best way to explain that is you can find ways to trust him in situations, and he's not going to hurt your team.
Matty, you talked about your role as somebody that tries to be part of a player's career. I'm sure you have had to, and Bomber and Cody had a lot of conversations with Charlie Strammel this season, and just trying to maybe even lift his spirits, try to maybe focus on some of the positives and things like that during another tough year at University of Wisconsin. How has he been handling the scrutiny that comes with being a first-round pick? And where do you see his future going right now? Because obviously there's a lot of talk that maybe when Wisconsin's season is over that he might look for a fresh start somewhere else.
Yeah, the second part, I'm going to stay away from that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of uncertainty, I guess, would be that's all up in the air.
But yeah, mentally, how tough has it been?
You know, Charlie's a very positive guy, mm-hmm. and he continues to build and grow his game. I think from the start of the season this year at Wisconsin to where he is now, he's really begun to find the identity that we all expect of him, and that is a north-south hockey player. If you've watched Charlie, he's a very good skater, especially in straight lines, which means he can exit the defensive zone in a hurry, whether that's at center or at wing. He can get on the opposition defenseman in a real big hurry on the forecheck. And we love to see that big body and that speed playing low in the offensive zone. And he's, you know, a credit to Charlie this year. He's put a lot of time in and work, conversations, video. And at the end of the day, he's putting the work in on the ice of practices, and it's starting to translate into games. And he's starting to find that identity that we've been trying to build and create throughout the season.
Hey, Matty, have they had any conversations with you about maybe signing you just for shootouts? Is that possible just for the rest of the season?
Well, that's why they don't give me the checkbook, because the first person I would sign would be myself. I think I'd put myself on the power play for the first time in my career.
I just want you for the shoot. These are big points down the stretch, and you got to win those shootouts, and you were one of the best at it. So,
yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. That move stopped working, though, Roos, when they quit doing the dry scrape for the shootout.
No doubt. Hendy, thanks.
Killed my career.
Thanks for doing this. This was fantastic. And you know what? So much more lively than we would have got with Brad Bombardier. So I really appreciate
it. Oh, geez. Oh, you know what, guys? Thanks a lot. And again, I'm real fortunate to work with Brad and Cody. They keep this job a lot of fun, and we have a lot of good laughs as well.
They're good dudes, as are you. Thanks, Hendy.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Matt Hendricks, Assistant Director of Player Development for the Minnesota Wild. They got their hands full. Like I said, especially in that job, Mike, to have to travel the globe like they do, it takes a special breed. I don't know that I could do it.
Yeah, and I think that one thing I was talking to Hendy about at the very beginning of the conversation is I do think that a lot of times when a GM hires a player, the one thing they have to really make sure of is, like, are you all in?
Yeah.
Do you realize that you do have to jump in both feet and be willing to travel and be away from your family, even though that's something that you've had to do your entire playing career as well. And sometimes that is a big convincing. And that's why I like what Bill Guerin has done this year with guys like Derek Stepan and Carl Hagelin, is they've given them different tastes of the organization, from player development to management to coaching and scouting, and said, all right, look, these are different areas that you could be in behind the scenes. And now take your pick, because eventually, if I'm going to make you full time, you've got to be all in to do that. And I think Derek Stepan has the ability, if he's willing to invest, to be a rock star in this league. And I think Matt Hendricks is somebody that's going to continue to elevate his career, both whether it's in this organization or another one, because I know from talking to everybody around this organization just how respected guys like Brad Bombardier and Cody McLeod and Matt Hendricks are.
Hendricks already sounds like he's in management.
Yeah,
some
I know.
Of those answers.
Hendricks, I'm telling you, Hendricks is he's on the rise.
Yeah.
He's a really, really well respected person, not just in this organization, but around the league. Like, I see him in the press box when he's up there, and how other organizations' employees just flock to him,
sure,
just from his days of playing and being around. So, I think that we're going to see Matty continue to rise here, and hopefully in this organization.
You're 62 minutes into filling in for Pat Micheletti on Beyond the Pond, but I don't know that anything could prepare you for Brett Blakemore's breakaways. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, no, I've heard him before, and usually I'm about, like, stressed out and about to hit a guardrail when I'm usually listening to him, so I can't wait to experience it live and be able to finally react.
That's next on Beyond the Pond. One more hour of Beyond. Well, that's not true. We're going right up to 12:45, so we got lots more to come, including at the bottom of the hour, Elliot Friedman's going to join to talk the NHL on a more global scale. He can talk about his impressions of the Minnesota Wild and the Western Conference and so on and so forth. We also got Joe O'Donnell and Tom Reed joining it from the top of the hour from the Al Shaver Press Box. They'll get us ready for the Wild and Blues puck drop at 1:08 here from St. Paul. But now it's time. The one thing we look forward to every week on Beyond the Pond, Michael, it's this. It's called Brett Blakemore's Breakaways.
It's time for Brett Blakemore's Breakaway.
So if Wayne Gretzky's kid had a kid and they entered the league in 2028, how would he fit into the Wild lineup? That's the first question?
No. No, it's not. I know you look forward to this.
I do.
Anyway, let's move on. The both of you, what are your personal, if you had to put a percentage on it, what do you think the percent chance is, not mathematically, just in your opinion, the percent chance the Wild make the playoffs?
Well, again, they got to win 10 of 12, so I'm going to put it at about 12%? I don't know. You're probably saying zero?
Yeah, I'm at zero. I've been at zero for a while.
It's not likely. Again, they got to win 10 of 12, and they've kind of put themselves in this position with some of the hurdles that they've dealt with all season long. And the injury thing is the biggest one, and I'm not making an excuse. It's just a fact. It's a reality. You've missed time with, and especially that right around the first of the year when they went to Dallas in the home and home and the home and home with the Winnipeg Jets, and they're going through that glut of injuries to the seven most important players on the team. They just haven't recovered from that.
Yeah, you take that one, like, they, even with the 19 games that they won five under Dean, they were back after going 11-3 pretty much under John Hines, and then they lost seven guys at once, and not just seven guys. We're talking Kaprizov, Zuccarello, Brodin, Spurgeon was obviously out. Foligno, Gustafson. Yeah. I mean, no team, especially one with $15 million in dead cap money, can handle that. So they go 1-7-1. It kills them. But even with that, like, if they had just not blown those third period leads against Nashville and Anaheim before the break, if they had not blown that point against Buffalo, just those alone, they'd be tied for a playoff spot right now. So, you know, those are games that you're going to look back on. But what concerns me about this team is that they just don't win the big games when they have to. They don't beat good teams. They've had, a couple wins against Florida and Carolina and all that, but for the most part, they're god-awful against the division. They've lost to all the teams ahead of them in the division. pretty much all year long. And then you get games like L.A. where you just think, oh, wow, what a huge win in Anaheim. Now you just got to show up, and they obviously get trounced. So those are the things that you can't recover on. It's not a 200-game season. It's 82, and they've put themselves in a real big pickle here.
So I'm just recapping here. Russo's been at 0% for a while, yet when I said we should play the kids and see what we've got, I was called a madman because we're still in the race.
What kids?
Yeah, that's the question.
That's the thing. It's not that I disagreed with you. I'm just like, who?
Volstead's one of them. He wanted them up here like a month ago when the Wild, yeah, you know, mathematically or whatever, they were still alive at that point in time, and they still are. I think once they're officially eliminated, that's a whole different ball of wax, and then you start bringing up the young guys.
Yeah, I think I see Volstead getting some games here down the stretch because I think they're going to want to know what they have in them going into the offseason.
I mean, if we all know it's 0%, then what's the difference? That's my
But again, what kids? I mean, you know, like you still owe it to these guys to play. You can't just not play Gus and Flurry the rest of the year. But regardless, what other kids? Like, or if we're talking Adam Weckman, he's gotten in the lineup now, and it's not like he's lighting it up by any stretch, and he's played with good players, and that's just a reality. Well, obviously, last game he was on the fourth line, but he's gotten into elevated roles and hasn't and looks like a tweener. In my opinion.
Well, let's go to this then. So a big point, I listened to Worst Seats in the House. Very well done, Russo, standing your ground against LaPanta. But one thing that you talked about was Hartman and his curious benching for part of the game. Mm-hmm. Yet, as of yesterday, he's still on the second line with Johansson and Boldy, and Husnadinov is on the third line. Do you expect that's going to be the case, regardless of performance, that those are going to be the guys just because they're getting paid, so they're on the top line?
Well, I think that this is a must-win, and for the most part, Ryan Hartman has played really well for the last 10 games, really well for the last 10 games, and gotten a bunch of points. He had a bad game in the second of a back-to-back the other game. I think you give him another shot. But, yeah, I just like there's a lot of underachievers on this team right now, and Ryan still has 17 goals and, for the most part, has been playing well. You know, it's Johansson and Goudreau that I think deserve a bigger bite out of John Hines than anybody else on the team. So he obviously had a very bad first period, a very bad first shift of the second period the other night, and paid the piper by basically not playing the rest of the second. And now you're giving him another opportunity here. But, again, if you're Eriksson's out, the question is who goes into that second hole. You know, do you want Freddie Goudreau there? You know, like, it's just right now there's not a lot of options here. That's why I will say that when fans ask me all the time, like, why don't they bench this guy, this guy, this guy? What are your options? There's none right now. And again, we haven't had that opportunity yet to see the top forward prospects hit Iowa, so there's just nothing there to call up. I mean, yeah, maybe we see Michael Milne at some point, I don't know, but it's not like anybody's being held back right now.
Well, Husnadinov's on the third line.
But Husnadinov is a middle six guy. Like, I think people are confusing Husnadinov and Yurov. I'm just saying, like, he is right now a third line guy. They're going with Ryan Hartman there. Like, I mean, I'm getting tweets like, why is Husnadinov not with Kaprizov? Like, I think people are just thinking, like, they're confusing their Russians. Husnadinov, this is going to be his role eventually in Minnesota as a third line center, most likely. You know, to me, that's where he is right now, and that should be a pretty good line with Foligno and Goudreau. To just elevate him into the lineup for no reason when he has not shown that he's a playmaker and all that type of stuff, I just don't see the reason for that. Again, this is not Danil Yurov. If Yurov was down here and playing on third or fourth lines, yeah, I'd be with you. But you know, Husnadinov is being plugged in where he should be.
Well, we'll go here then, speaking of him. Since I can't talk about the future with Kevin and Pat, I'll talk about the future with you. Russo, what would be your ETA for Yurov, Firstov, and who you talked about, Riley Height?
By the way, please talk about the future. I got no problem with that, because especially when you're talking about the Wild and the organization, the future is great, it's bright, but you're talking about what do you think the potential line combinations will be 5 years from now. I don't know what they'll be this fall.
I said what would be the top nine once the salary cap goes up. That's not that ridiculous. But anyways, what's the ETA for these prospects?
Well, Riley, I think, you know, I could see him even getting, if he has a really quality training camp, I could see him getting at least a little look at the beginning of next season. He's been that good, that dynamic in the WHL, and I think they're going to give him a chance, which, you know, they do have some spots that they could potentially open up. Not a lot. But I think that he'll get a shot in training camp. I still think that eventually probably going back to junior makes the most sense for him at 19 years old. And then I think that we see him in a year or two here in the National Hockey League. As far as Yurov, I mean, they are still trying to sign him. Right now he's got that extension in waiting in the KHL. You know, there's negotiations that's going on behind the scenes with his representatives. I don't want to get into exactly what the pickle is. It's I think, you know, from what I'm hearing, pretty unreasonable from his side, some of the expectations of his contract for a team that's got a major, major cap issues.
But you don't want to get into it.
Well, I just think that. All right, I'll get into it.
But you basically did.
I just think that he wants max bonuses, especially bonuses that have no chance of being attained. Mm. But the Wild have to account for those bonuses in their cap. And for a team, gotcha. Like, look at Brock Faber this year. You think he wishes he had performance bonuses in his contract?
Yeah.
But he did the Wild a solid that they're going to wind up paying back in contract extension. I can guarantee that. But he'd be making an extra almost $1 million this year in bonuses. He'd hit three or four of his A bonuses if he had them. He's got none.
Yeah.
But you know what? His representatives and Brock were very, very reasonable in their contract negotiations, understanding the complexities of what the Wild were dealing with. And so I know that we've gotten off topic, but I think that Yurov, when he gets over here, it's not going to be long. He is an absolute stud.
Is he forecast as a center?
You know, he's been playing center a lot of this year and has done damn well. The Wild, I think, would love him to be the guy that eventually just they plug in for Marcus Johansson when his contract is up. But yeah, I mean, look, as you know, if he could play center at a high, high level, this team would love that. And because that's the area that this team's had holes in forever. And as far as Ogren, you asked, you know, look, he's another middle six guy. I think he's going to definitely need time in Iowa. You know, he's obviously coming off of a significant injury this year that made him miss, you know, a huge chunk of the season, but starting to play much, much better. But he's going to need time in Iowa. So I'm thinking a couple years down there, but with call-ups and things like that.
Brett, let's do this. Let's squeeze in a break. We can get to more Brett Blakemore's breakaways on the other side of break. We'll also open up the phone lines. Haven't had a chance to take a lot of phone calls because we've had some pretty cool guests thus far, but we'll open up the phone lines next. If you want to get involved, you can talk to the Michael Russo. No, I'm serious. He's right here in living color, and he's ready to take your calls at 800-320-5326. You can also text us. The text lines have been blowing up, and I just haven't gotten around to them, but keep sending those in to 646-86. More Brett Blakemore and more Beyond the Pond when we continue on The Fan. Welcome back to Beyond the Pond. Kevin Faumas along with Michael Russo. Time to get to you some of your calls and emails and texts, whatever you got, 800-320-5326. Coming up here in just a little bit, Elliot Friedman, and one of the best voices in our game. It'll be great to check in with him north of the border typically, but I know that you and him were together at the GM meetings, and I'm sure you guys had a blast.
Yeah, we did. It was fun. We had a dinner with Lou Nanny on Tuesday night, and Lou was just holding court, telling story after story after story. So that's always, I know Elliot and Jeff Merrick especially, who has immense respect for Louie. That's always one of their most fun times that we have down at the GM's meetings when we're down there. We always have a nightly dinner with Louie, and on this one, he had just landed from the Turks and Caicos, took his car service back up to his place in West Palm Beach, North Palm Beach, and had the car drop him off at the restaurant. I would have gone home and canceled on Elliot right. and not him.
A couple of quick little Twitter things, or just text, 64686 from 651 guy. When did Mike get his Twitter blue check mark? I thought you hated Twitter. Why the blue check mark? Is this new?
Do I have the blue check mark?
Do I have the blue check mark? Yeah, you have the blue check mark.
Oh, I do have it.
Yeah? You didn't ask for it? You didn't go seek it out?
Wow, that's interesting. Does that mean I can edit now? Because that'll be...
I guess so.
Let me look at this.
I don't know what the perks of a blue check mark are. Do I have a blue check mark? Of course you do. By the way, more Amsterdam guy checks in. Brett Blakemore, so obsessed with the future.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
The other day I saw him tinkering with a DeLorean. That's a fantastic line.
I wish I had a DeLorean sometimes.
Back to the phone lines we go. 800-320-5326. Let's check in with Denny in Prior Lake. How we doing, Denny?
I'm sitting in the hospital right now. I got surgery at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't take my last shot just so I could talk to Mr. Russo.
Wow. Holy mackerel. You had surgery this morning?
I think you're going to.
No, I have it 6 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. Good luck to you.
Yeah, very much so. You know, we're all pulling for you. How are your spirits, Denny?
Well, thank you. Well, it always pumps me up to talk to you guys, as you know.
All right, well, lay it on us. What do you got? And if you don't mention Alex Micheletti, you get bonus points.
Well, I don't know. Now, I call this the Minnesota mess.
Okay.
And it starts with Billy. Billy does one good thing. He gets good deals for players. When he takes Fiala, Greenway, et cetera, that's what he's best at. He's not good at signing contracts and extending. Goodrow and Johansson should be bought out and put away. When you average one shot per game for 2 months, why are they playing? I don't get it. I would definitely put Beckman up with Rossi because Beckman's a shooter, Rossi's a playmaker. Give him a chance. Putting him down in the fourth line does nothing for him.
Well, he was.
Next, I would bring up Damon Hunt.
Uh huh.
He played his way onto the team when he was here, but they still sent him down. Why? I have no idea. Because he's damn sight better than three of the players playing right now. And another thing, why not give Murat a chance at centering Kaprizov? Let's see what he's got. I mean, this is the time. We're not going to
play. I would rather see Marco Rossi with Kaprizov right now. I mean, like, I that's the one thing I don't understand what fans want. It's like they were all upset that Kuznetsov's not getting elevated to the lineup, so put him with Kaprizov. They've been whining all year that Marco wasn't getting that chance. Well, now Marco's in that spot because Eriksson-Ek's hurt. So I don't agree with you there. You know, in terms of Damon Hunt, I mean, look, you know, contracts rule the roost. I mean, that is just, that's a fact of life in the NHL for the 29 years I've covered it. Would you love to see Damon Hunt over, you know, a John Merrill? But John Merrill has a guaranteed contract that he is here. They've decided that for whatever reason, they don't want to put him on waivers. I will say that John Merrill, I think, has played fine since the All-Star break for the most part. Alex Goligoski has a no-move clause. There's only so many players that you can put on the team. You know, in terms of your Goodrow and Johansson thing, look, I'm with you. They've been brutal, but they're not going to be bought out. They're not going to buy out 4 years of Freddie Goodrow here. They're going to hope that he has an incredible summer and comes back healthy and is ready to go to show that he was the player that he looked to be last year. And as far as JoJo, one thing, I'm not going to second-guess the signing because I wrote a column saying they needed to sign him because I looked at the evidence of him with Matt Boldy last year. And they were unbelievable together. But he has been a colossal disappointment this year. I'm totally with you on that. I wouldn't buy him out, though, because still at $2 million, if he does his job and gets 50-55 points, I think that's a quality top six guy that you could have there to buy time for the Euros or some of these other young kids that are coming. And the other thing you hope with him is that it's a contract year, so you hope you're getting the very, very best out of him next year because he's going to be incredibly motivated.
Denny, thanks for the phone call, my friend.
Good luck to you, Denny. Yeah,
be well, get better, and we'll talk to you during the next Fan Line and or Beyond the Pond.
When is the next Fan Line?
I have no idea. I don't know who's going where and when it will be. So we'll find out, and we'll let you know. We'll get it out there somehow, some way.
All right, we'll see you next Saturday anyway.
See you, buddy.
Thanks,
love it. Denny.
That's incredible that he's calling from the hospital. He's not in enough pain that he's got to talk to you and I.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like, oh, my God. He comes in, he's got to hear your voice,
yeah,
and then he's got to have me basically, like, you know, kind of spit on all his takes. I feel bad for that, but really good luck tomorrow. I cannot believe that that one of your calls, like the last thing would be on my mind if I was in the hospital was be talking to you and
yeah,
me.
Yeah, well, that's what they've got on their mind, talking a little Wild hockey, and that's for good reason because they're on the ice tonight. This afternoon, 1 o'clock, puck drops at 1:08. The official pregame starts at 12:45, and we'll walk you right up to the drop of the puck. We got to squeeze in a break, and then when we continue, Elliot Friedman joins us on Beyond the Pond.
This is Kevin Gorg, and I'll give you...
Tracking down Elliot Friedman. When we got him, we will get him on the horn ASAP. Going back to the text lines, Michael, this one comes in from a guy in the 320 area code. Come into the game, wants to buy a Murat Khuznetdinov jersey at the Lodge. Will he be here long enough to make it worth the while?
Yeah, no, I think that's a safe bet. I think it's a safe bet adding guys like Faber and Boldy and Kaprizov and... Obviously, Lena Hartman. Goudreau. Get yourself a Goudreau jersey. They're going to be here a while. But, yeah, no, Khuzhnadinov. Actually, I was walking by the Hockey Lodge, and they have Khuzhnadinov jerseys up there. So they have enough letters. We know that they could fit it on there before because we saw Niederreiter on a jersey.
Yeah.
So that we knew they had enough letters. I think it's the exact number of letters. So, yep.
If you want to have Alyssa Mitel time. You're counting Niederreiter and Khuzhnadinov?
Well, I think if you take the number 22 jersey that you have and just have the nameplate change, there you go.
There you go.
Save some money.
Looks like we got Elliot. So let's go to the phone lines in Toronto. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet, NHL Network. He's on there all the time. Hockey Night in Canada. He's everywhere. You can also find him on Twitter at Friege, H-N-I-C. Elliot, I'm Kevin Faulness. That's Michael Russo. How is it getting over the fact that you just spent a handful of days with Michael down in Florida?
Well, Kevin, he drove me around, so it was more bearable. He was basically my chauffeur. So, as you know, the rules of etiquette and politeness mean that if you're going to have somebody drive you around, you have to put up with their... Let's call them peculiarities. So I can't be complaining.
That doesn't sound relaxing, though. Driving around with Michael Russo anywhere doesn't exactly sound like something that would soothe my soul.
Well, you know, aside from the fact he's going 25 in the passing lane, he's actually a pretty good driver.
I think that, you know, one of the funniest things is that I wound up at the Florida Panthers practice facility's ribbon cutting with you. And I didn't even know about it. It was actually that you told me about it, and it was just pretty neat from my standpoint because I actually covered practices at the old Gold Coast Ice Arena, which was a pit when the Panthers first came into existence up in Pompano Beach, and obviously at Incredible Ice in Coral Springs, and now we got to go to this one, and I think it was only fitting that I was there.
Yeah, you know what? I got to say, like, you saw them when they were at the beginning. You saw them when they were new. I got to say, this thing is pretty impressive.
And yeah.
Like, for a lot of places like Minnesota, like where you guys are, hockey's in the blood, right? Like, you could just put up, you know, four walls and a roof, and you don't even need to in some of those cases, and people are just going to show up and play. Like, we know hockey, and we love hockey. Like, you think about where it's kind of gone in the last 25 to 30 years, it's definitely gone some places that we didn't know if it would make it or it would survive. And we used to joke about a lot of those places, but, you know, they've got a real foothold there. I got to say, it's a beautiful facility. The outdoor barbecue, that's when I knew that they're going to have no trouble recruiting players to come go play down there when you finish your practice and you can sit outside your practice facility in January or February and do an outdoor barbecue. That's a bit of a recruiting advantage.
Yeah, and the players are driving to practice in golf carts because they all live on all those little inlets there. So it's a heck of a facility. Elliot, you and I just came back from the general manager's meetings, and it was funny because there was not a lot of news, but yet it felt like a lot of news because there were just so many little things. They have, you know, about 10 or 12 different types of suggestions that are going to go to the competition meeting committee this summer from the general managers, and then would, if approved there, be ratified by the Board of Governors. The enhanced goal coaches challenges possibility for next year is the most intriguing. Could you imagine being a video coach now? Like, your day job is actually to document games, to mark breakouts and neutral zone forechecks, but yet now you almost need a team of people to understand what all the rules that are going to need to be looked at in a very short span to determine if you're going to tell your head coach to challenge something starting maybe next year.
Well, you know, I was watching last night. I don't know how much you guys watched Washington, Carolina last night, but the Capitals video coaches got two hurricane goals disallowed. Like, they were the right calls, but they challenged it. And, you know, I'll say this, like, a lot of those video coaches, they don't make a ton of money. Like, I was talking about this on the pod the other day about how valuable these people are and how they should be well paid for what they do. And someone called me later and he said, look, like, one of the things the teams know is that there's so many young people who want to get into coaching or get into hockey ops that, like, teams have the pick of people they can hire for these jobs because there's so many people who want to do it. But, like, in the situations you're talking about, if you're wrong, it's not just a power play against you. It's a 5-on-3 for 2 minutes. And I just think the people who do these jobs, they have to have ice in their veins. Because you're right. If you're right, Michael, everybody loves you. But if you make a bad challenge, think of all the your people in the organization who are going to be looking at you like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
And especially in a 5-on-3, I mean, you have to have ice in your veins to do these jobs, and it's rapidly becoming one of the most important jobs in all of hockey.
Kevin, I'll let you ask a question in a second, but this reminds me of, we were in St. Louis a couple weeks ago, Elliot, and John Hines made one of the world's worst challenges that I've ever seen, and I hammered him. All right. And then between periods, I was talking to Bill Guerin. I'm like, what was that with the challenge? He goes, blame us up here. We're the ones that told him to do it. Like, it was actually the eye in the sky and probably Billy that's like challenged that. And then when they looked at the replay after the challenge, I think they all realized, whoa, there was absolutely nothing there. But you need a GM that's going to be willing to take the bullet, too. So, Kevin, so sorry about that.
But Elliot, I'm wondering, you mentioned the fact that you guys were in Florida for the GM meetings and talking about some of the places where the NHL has thrived, despite maybe some people not thinking that it would. I know another topic down there was the state of the Arizona Coyotes. Where do you see this thing going, and are they going to survive this latest blow to their franchise?
You know, like one thing, Kevin, like I have learned when it comes to predictions on the Coyotes, do not make predictions. Like, how many times have we said, this is it, this is the final straw, and it's never been. So the one thing I really do believe, though, Kevin, is that we are at a path right now where either they're going to figure out the arena in the short term or they're going to go and eventually come back. Like, we're at that path right now. There's only two roads to go down. One is they win and they get a new arena, or they win the auction and they start putting together plans for a new arena. And the other is, you know what, this isn't going to work here at this time, and we're going to leave, and we'll bring a team back to Arizona when we've sorted out the arena problem. I actually think there's two plans going on right now. There's the one plan which the owner says, I am determined to win this auction in June, and it's going to be in June, and I'm going to build a new arena. And the other plan is something falls apart or they don't win, and the NHL said, here's where we're going. And I think both of those plans are happening at the same time. I think so. We don't know yet what the final answer is, but the paths are being prepared for both things to take place. Like, I do think there is a plan potentially to have them somewhere else next year, and I also think there's a plan for them to play next year in Arizona with the knowledge that they're on the way to a new arena.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I also agree with you that if they do relocate, that in 5 years or so, when we see expansion back and this league is no doubt going to 34 teams, that we could see Atlanta and Arizona being those expansion teams if they relocate. We were talking with Elliot Friedman, the most plugged in hockey insider out there. Elliot Friedman, you can follow him on Twitter at Fridge, HNIC, and listen to his awesome podcast with Jeff Merrick called 32 Thoughts. Look that up anywhere you get your podcast. Elliot, LTIR was a huge topic down there, and this is something that I'm sure bothers Wild fans as well, when they're a team that, you know, to their own doing, because they bought out Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, have 14.7 in dead money this year and next year. And then you look at a team like the Vegas Golden Knights, who have a payroll of what some GMs say is about $115 million with all the moves that they made at the deadline. But yet it really didn't lead to much of a conversation at all down there, and it didn't sound like the GMs have a major, major problem with this. I sometimes wonder if from a competitive balance standpoint, if players are the ones that are ever going to have to be the ones that really make a big cry about this to Marty Walsh to ever get the league to actually make a change. Because I can't imagine that a lot of players on other teams love seeing this when they are in a situation where their teams aren't able to pull those triggers.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Elliot, did we lose you? Might have lost earlier.
I think we did. Well, we're going to have to give him a holler back. You can tell he's walking and talking at the same time, which isn't always easy, but I think they're going at it there. Is it Edmonton and Toronto tonight? Are they in Toronto?
Yeah, Zach Hyman, 2 goals away from 50, and he could do it in the old Air Canada Center where he played.
How about that?
That would be something if he gets those 2 goals there in front of the fan base that now are watching him just become a star going into a contract.
That's one thing I wanted to ask Elliot, because he's right there in Toronto, and we know how starved Canada is for a Stanley Cup champion. They've got three legitimate contenders right now in Toronto, Edmonton, and Vancouver. Do one of them have enough to pull it out this year?
Could you imagine if you were the Vancouver Canucks and had a year like this, and you might be facing Vegas in the first round?
Right? Yeah, right.
And then Toronto might have to play Florida. Like, yeah. There's just no, I mean, I think what it just shows you is there's just no easy paths, right? I mean, path right now. Because, like, Colorado is the team to me that's, like, playing the best out of anybody right now. And, you know, they're a franchise that made a lot of moves at the deadline, but they did it a little bit different. Like, a lot of people, like, loaded up with, like, star power, where I think Chris McFarlane and the Avs really located areas in their lineup where they wanted to improve the bottom six to go get Trenton and Duham, where they wanted to go get a second line center that when Ryan Johansson wasn't working, and they go get a player with control that they have in his contract in Casey Mittelstadt. And then obviously, you know, we've seen them do this before. They get Nichushkin back, they get Scott Walker. That's a pretty good team as well.
Do you like the playoff format right now, the divisional thing, or would you like them to go back to one versus eight?
I like one versus eight. I do. It is interesting that the Wild, you know, if any year that you'd probably want to go crossover and play the Pacific, the Wild have that ability, and they're, you know, likely not making the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
It's too bad, for sure. It'll be interesting to see what happens today, though, because, you know, say what you will about that game in Los Angeles the other night. That was a blow. They had an opportunity to close within one of Vegas for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. And, of course, the end result was a 6-0 beatdown of the Los Angeles Kings. Obviously, there were some pucks that did not go their way, and there were some bounces, including off of Marcus Foligno's stick. The one that made a 5-0 was a deflection off the hosel of his stick. You know, nothing you can do about that. And that was a tough night for Marc-Andre Fleury, and you could see the frustration on every guy's face in that lineup.
Their penalty kill just has to be much, much better. And that's, you know, the one thing is, like, yeah, these were bad bounces, but if you listen to Brian Boucher and Eddie Olchuk throughout that game on TNT, they were commenting on a lot of the veterans and how their stick positionings are in bad places and things like that. And you're talking about a penalty kill that is 29th in the league that was really killed them in last year's playoffs. And we've heard John Hines bemoan this fact as well, that there are just details on a penalty kill that's just not good enough. And what concerns me is that they're essentially going to roll it back next year, right? Obviously, Spurgeon being out all year has affected things. You know, obviously, Eric's next injury now hurts, and Foligno's been hurt all year and things like that, or off and on this year, playing through a lot of stuff. But you just wonder at some point what Bill Guerin's going to have to do to address this, because this is killing them. I mean, their penalty kill, if you look at them for not making the playoffs this year, you could blame that alone on how bad it's been. They just do not kill penalties when they need to kill penalties. And when you're returning essentially the same team next year, you're now looking at internal improvement. Now, maybe if you can develop a Murat Huznadinov to go out there and win that draw, which is the first, you know, big thing, that would be very helpful.
Let's go back to Toronto. Elliot Friedman is there. We lost you there, Elliot. Sorry about the connection there, but good to have you back. We were trying to figure out how to solve the Wild's penalty kill. What are your thoughts? I'm just kidding.
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, I talked for another 2 minutes straight before realizing that I was gone. And then I finished. I didn't hear you guys, and I was like, okay, and I looked at my phone. I had a text from Russo saying, lost you. So, like, I just want you to know that, like, so the point I was just saying about the
LTIR.
I don't know where I got cut off.
Yeah, we didn't hear a word you said about LTIR. Let's put it that way.
You did? Okay. So, like, I would say this. I would say that for one thing, it's a collective bargaining issue, so nothing's going to sort its way out there. And this is something they're going to have to talk about with the players and see how everybody feels. Now, the thing is, there's two ways you can do this, potentially. Number one, you can say, okay, if you don't play 82 of the regular season, you can't play a certain amount of time in the playoffs. Let's just argue for argument's sake. The other thing you could say is that your 20-skater roster for a game in the playoffs has to be under the cap. We don't care about anybody who's not dressed, but your 20-skater roster has to be under the cap. Now, Michael, I heard what you said about guys not liking the way that teams are stacking themselves potentially. The one thing that was raised to me is, what's going to happen when the Players Association leadership says, okay, if you vote for this, one of you guys could be out? How do you feel about that?
Mm-hmm.
And And they're going to be players that say, yeah, I don't know if I want that to be me. So we'll see where this goes in bargaining. But I also did hear this. A couple of guys said to me, if Mark Stone shows up in game one of the playoffs, that's going to rip the Band-Aid off this again. Everybody's mm-hmm. going to be up in arms. Nobody's questioning the legitimacy of his injury. Nobody is saying this guy is not hurt or is faking something. But the timing of when he comes back, it'll be a fiasco on social media that night. And you know what? Like, everybody will be saying privately.
Yeah.
We know you're there in the center of the hockey universe. This is why the question I just posed to Michael when we lost you about the hunger level for a Stanley Cup in Canada. Toronto, of course, is a whole nother level.
Oh, yeah.
But you got four contenders there. You know, Toronto, I forgot about Winnipeg, too. You got Vancouver, you got Edmonton. Is this the year finally Canada breaks through?
You talk about hunger, Kevin. Have you ever eaten a two-person steak by yourself? That's what the hunger is like right now in Canada. That's exactly what, like, I joke right now. So I left university. I'm always careful to say I didn't graduate. I don't want anyone thinking I'm committing any fraud here. I left university in 93. That is the last time a Canadian team won the championship, won the Stanley Cup, the Montreal Canadiens. And I always say, and it's not even a joke anymore, I just want to see a Canadian team win the Stanley Cup before I get fired and run out of this business. That is my pure goal, is just seeing one of them win. And I'll say this. I think there are some teams here that are good enough to win. Like, that Central Division, the whole key is not finishing second or third.
Yeah.
Not that first place is going to be a piece of cake, but it's not going to be as bad as 2-3. Like, I do think the Western representative this year, and that's going to be three Canadian teams, Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Vancouver, I think it's going to come down to who you get in the first round and what your path is and what travel you get to, because travel can take a lot out of you in the playoffs as well. So, like, I think all those teams are good enough to win. I just want to see who gets what matchup.
Elliot, you know, a big topic here in Minnesota lately has been the fact that John Hines, and again, it's not like they have a lot of depth, you know, hasn't, you know, really made guys like Marcus yeah. Johansson and Freddie Goudreau pay the piper with a press box seat despite their season-long struggles. We just saw John Tortorella, you know, he's done it to Bobby Brink, Cam Atkinson, and now his captain, Sean Couturier, scratch him for two straight games tonight in warmups. He's on the fourth line. I mean, this is right out of the John Tortorella playbook. I can't even imagine how many games Johansson and Goudreau would be scratched here if Torts was coaching. What do you make of this whole Tortorella thing this year?
Well, I mean, the one thing that's amazing to me is, well, first of all, you know what it says to me, Michael? It's the popularity of Couturier, both among his peers and in the market. Like nobody can be surprised at this. Nobody. Like, John Tortorella has no sacred cows. This is what he does. He scratches guys who aren't performing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there's been this much outcry, it says to me the popularity of Couturier. And sometimes, how much there's some people who like to go after Tortorella. Like, he's having a Jack Adams season. Like, they have no business, anybody thought, being where they are. And they are in a good shape to make the playoffs. So I think that's one of the things that says to me, there hasn't been this much outcry for other scratches. There hasn't been much complaint about what Tortorella's done this year. This one hit a nerve because of how popular Couturier is. And I think that's the difference in this case. Now, you know, like, I haven't always liked the fact that he hasn't been there to answer for it.
Yeah.
And I think, and Jeff Merrick, my podcast partner who you mentioned, he's got a theory that Tortorella doesn't want to pour gasoline on the fire, which is fine, but I think, you know, you kind of have to be there. But to me, the reaction to this one, Michael, is all about how much people really like Couturier. And I don't know if it would be the same for just about any other player.
Yeah. I agree with you there. Hey, last question for you, Elliot. I mean, you, as I've always said, you're the most plugged in insider out there and one of the hardest working people I've ever seen in the business. Just being around you at these GMs meetings, and this is after the trade deadline, you are never not on your phone. I mean, it is, and I'm not one to talk because I am always pasted to my phone, but a lot of times I'm just playing dice with buddies. How the heck, how do you, like, you know how it is. Like, sometimes you just want to unwind and decompress and not think about hockey. And, you know, it becomes exhausting sometimes when you feel like you always have to be connected. And that's how I feel just covering one team, not wanting to miss something. I can't imagine 32. How do you handle that? Does it get exhausting for you to just constantly have to, you know, always be in the know and in connected?
Well, you know, I think I'm better at it than I used to be, Michael. And, you know, my son's getting older. He's 12 now. I've already missed a lot, but we all miss a lot. We make our choices, right? When you go into this business, this is not a 9-to-5 business. But I find now I'm getting better at saying no at certain things. I wish I looked at my phone a little bit less. I am looking at ways to try to break my screen addiction a little bit. There's no question about that. I will say this, Michael. One of the things that, and Kevin, is that I'm better at now is admitting that I'm not going to break everything. Mm-hmm. I hate to get beaten. I cannot stand it. It really pisses me off a lot of the time. But I've come to the conclusion that no matter how much work I do, there are things I'm simply not going to see coming and going to get beaten on. And I think that's one of the keys, because although I don't like it, I've learned that that's just the way it is. And that's allowed me to dial back a little bit.
Yeah. We had Frank Saravalli on a couple weeks ago. He just says he throws up his arms when it comes to Minnesota, because now not only do you have to deal with Russo, but he's got his sidekick here and the two of them are doing everything. So how do you contend with Minnesota?
I know if I ever get something out of Minnesota before those guys too, I've really done my work. They are really, really on top of things. That is definitely true.
Awesome, Elliot. Hey, thanks for doing this. This was fantastic. I know you've had your share of Russo over the last week or so, but thanks for sharing your time with our listening audience here in Minnesota.
I now call him Jeeves, my driver. I really appreciate that.
Love it. Thank you, sir.
See you, Elliot.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
There you go. Elliot Friedman. I do listen to his podcast a lot.
Great.
Him and Jeff Merrick on the 32 Thoughts, the podcast. I just strongly suggest that. Follow him on Twitter. He's a great follow there as well, at Frij, H-N-I-C. And you can find him everywhere, especially if you watch anything to do with Canadian hockey. They've got it all over the place on Sportsnet, on the NHL Network, anywhere and everywhere you can find Elliot Friedman. We are late for a break. Let's do that. When we continue, we'll check in the Al Shaver Press Box. We're going to check in with Tom Reed and Joe O'Donnell next on Beyond the Pond. An extended Beyond the Pond. We're taking you right up to the Wild pregame at 12:45. Puck drops at 1:08. Gives us an opportunity. And Mike Russo just doing an awesome job. You're so comfortable behind the microphone, and you very rarely talk into a microphone, so it's strange to see how well you've adapted to it.
Yeah, it's hard doing filling in for Pat Micheletti and his son Alex.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's two different takes going into one brain, coming out of one mouth. So, and obviously we trust Alex's takes a little more than Pat.
Oh, well, yeah, that's up for debate as well. Let's go upstairs to the Al Shaver Press Box. My close personal friend Tom Reed is there, ready to call all the play-by-play action. Tom, you've met Michael Russo of The Athletic and TheAthletic.com?
Is that the guy who's always on the phone?
That's one and the same.
Or
yes.
Is that Joe O'Donnell? Which one is it? I can't remember.
So we just had Elliot Friedman on the line, and he had the audacity to tell Elliot he spends too much time on his phone. Mike Russo said that of all people, Tom.
Well, I'm surprised, but you know, when you talk about Elliot and you talk about Michael, both those guys work very, very hard, and they give you a pretty good analysis of what's going on with the different teams around the league and so on. So I can't fault them, because they do spend a lot of time talking hockey, maybe a little bit more than I do, but that's okay.
Well, you were forced to talk a little hockey the other night in Los Angeles. That was about as frustrating a night for you guys as broadcasters, but you could tell, especially like even the fifth goal for Foligno, he takes a slap shot at the boards. You can tell that was one of those nights he wanted to forget quickly.
Yeah, I'm glad it didn't go over the glass. That was a good thing, because it would have taken about six heads off, that's for sure. But, you know, that was one of those games, too. And, you know, and look at those, the goals. Look at, as you watch them, I'm thinking, well, this can't be happening. I mean, Minnesota did not get a break in that game when it came to goals, and certainly the LA Kings did. And, you know, off of skates, off of bodies, and even Mermis, when he went on to make a nice save to block that pass going across, hits his body and ricocheted the wrong way in behind Fleury. So, you know, it's behind them right now. They can't worry about what happened then. Right now they've got to win some hockey games, and hopefully it starts here today.
Tom, we've gotten a look now of Murat Huzmadinov for a handful of games now, can win a big draw, is strong on the forecheck. What have your impressions of seeing this?
I go back, Mike, to the first game he played. I thought the speed that he had in that game, of course, he's excited being in his first NHL game. He came out and did his little lap by himself here, kind of the introduction to the National Hockey League. But I thought he was good. He just needs some time. He needs some seasoning. He's not a very big guy, so he has to rely on his ability and also his speed to make some good things happen. But I was pretty impressed with him. Even his faceoffs were very good, especially in the first game. He's still over 500 in that regard as well. So hopefully that will continue.
You know, it must be a big shot down here in the studio. Of course, Michael Russo down here in the Bob Kurtz Radio Center. So Joe O'Donnell comes down here. Rather than hang out with you, he wants his time, his FaceTime with Russo, I guess.
Hey, it was quicker to come here.
He knows where to go. Let me tell you. I'll just go sit up here by myself. Here comes our producer up here, too.
Halvey's up there as well?
Yeah, he's up here.
Is that what Halvey's called, a producer?
Call him director, producer. Call him whatever you want. At least he's up here with me.
What does he produce other than spilling soup all over your equipment?
He did do that. In my brand new studio, he just put a big soup stain in the middle of my new carpet, but whatever. You know what? We're going to get him wrapped in bubble wrap. Joe, we were talking about the frustrations of the other night in Los Angeles. We could see it on the face of Foligno at one point, for sure. For Marc-Andre Fleury, that's one that I'm sure that he wants to erase from his memory bank ASAP.
Yeah, I think so. It just felt like everything went wrong, right? As John Hines put it, the game kind of got away from them. They didn't play terribly. The effort was there, but it just felt like every puck bounced LA's way the other night. There are games that are going to be like that. Tom touched on the broadcast. You're going to play 82 games. You're going to have a few like that. Just, again, when you put yourself in a spot where you can't afford a let up, you can't afford a letdown, you can't afford a losing streak, to have a game like that occur that time of year, frustrating for sure.
Joe, you know, the one thing about that game, it was really striking to see Ryan Hartman benched the entire second period. Obviously, real tough first period for him. The icing and the turnover that led to the first goal, penalty kill mistake, and then beaten to the net on the fourth goal to start the second period. That's something we haven't seen John Hines really do yet, is pull that card. Were you shocked?
I would say that ice time is the one thing that players probably care the most about, right, outside of their contract, is playing time. So if you want to get somebody's attention, it's the best way to do it. The one thing I have talked about a few times, Russo, is John Hines has been way more decisive and not as patient with line combinations. We've seen that a ton, in-game, game-to-game. He'd be on a three-game winning streak, and he juggles the line. So that's something Dean Evason, I felt like, really never did. He was much more loyal to, here are my trios, here are my D pairs, and we'll let them work through it. Good
Except
or bad.
For Fiala.
Right, yeah. Well, but they had a long history together. Good point. But for the most part, I mean, like I said 2 years ago, you could pencil in Hartman, Zuccarello, and Kaprizov together for, what, 70 out of 80 games or whatever they played probably together that year. So John Hines has been way more quick to pull the trigger on some of those tougher decisions. Again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's just a different style. I'd expect Ryan Hartman to bounce back today in a big way.
Tom, when you look at the opposition today, we know how critical these 2 points are for the Wild. It's probably improbable that they're going to do it, but it's not impossible. But it's as critical as it is for the Wild, it's just as critical for the St. Louis Blues. Can we expect and hope for some playoff intensity today?
Well, I would think so, Kevin. It's interesting, too, when you look at these last two teams. You look at Minnesota in their last 9 games. They've gone 6-1-2 in that stretch, which is pretty good. But you look at also the St. Louis Blues in the last 6 games. They've won 5 out of the 6, scoring 18 goals, giving up 12. So these two teams are in a little bit of a run right now as far as getting some points. And, of course, at this time of the year, you better get some points, and this is a critical game for Minnesota in my mind. They have to win this one today.
Tom, how cool is it that Nick Leddy is going to get play his 1,000th game here in Minnesota, the team that drafted him 16th overall in 2009. He was traded before he ever got to even play a game for them, and he's beaten them in 4 playoff series, I might add.
Which
he said is pretty sweet.
And who's
but just
counting?
For the stars to align, for him to play 1,000 games in front of his friends and family, he got a suite for the game. for everybody. It's pretty sweet how just the stars align there.
Yeah, and you're right, Mike. The thing is, I remember walking into the locker room when he was first drafted and meeting him for the first time and said, it's great to have you here. It's going to be a good career for you. That's certainly starting here in Minnesota. Well, it didn't take very long because they traded for Cam Barker, who was a bust with this hockey club. But you look at Nick Leddy. He's gone on to play not only in Chicago and won the Stanley Cup in his rookie year, but went to the New York Islanders. He went to Detroit and now in St. Louis. And he's a guy now that is playing his 1,000th game, as you mentioned. But if you go back even when he was playing in Minnesota here, as Mr. Hockey Wagon in 2009, I think, with Eden Prairie. He's just been a treat to watch. And his biggest asset, Mike, and I think you'll agree, is his skating ability. He's so good. He can get off on a dime, and he can make some good things happen on the offensive side of things.
Joe, when you're in that profession, you can't look at the past. You can't think about what could have been. But I would guarantee Chuck Fletcher wants a mulligan on that one.
Yeah, I would think so. That's the life of a GM, right? Every time you make a deal, you know, you can look back on 5 years later and say, boy, that really worked out or didn't work out. I mean, it's just way different. Way different. Okay, I'm going to preface that. But, you know, if the Wild find something here in Declan Chisholm long term, maybe the Winnipeg Jets 2-3 years from now are going, man, what do we do? Why didn't we give this kid a chance? So it happens a lot in hockey. Guys you've forgotten about resurface elsewhere. A change of scenery can help a guy greatly. But, yes, certainly that's a deal that goes down in Wild history as one that did not work out well for Minnesota.
Yeah, I think the Hansel one also goes. Chuck Fletcher had a couple.
Yeah. How about Chris Simon?
Yeah, man, that one's a tough one. The Chris Simon trade was not a very good one. But
I remember standing in Washington talking to the players. Who are we getting? Who are we getting? Yeah. And Doug came in and said, we got Chris Simon. The look in their face was, my God.
I'll never forget that. I totally agree. Tom, I can't believe you just said that because I just had this memory of the same thing. I was standing out by the team bus there at the Mayflower Hotel when the guys came out. And they all want to know, you're telling me that, like, because remember, at that time, it looked like the Wild, they won the division, right?
Yeah.
Like, it looked like they had a chance to make something, make some noise in the playoffs. And if you remember, in 2007, they played Anaheim, and they were pushed around.
Yep.
And the whole Brad May incident with Kim Janssen and all that stuff. And I feel like that Doug tried to compensate for that by going out the next year and adding Todd Fedoruk on waivers and Chris Simon. They went in for, you know, all this meat in the playoffs. So I think Jacques only played Simon a couple games, but the players were so ticked off that day.
Yeah.
As popular as Chris Simon became actually on the team, because he was a great guy,
yep.
And a really quality teammate to a lot of people, I think that there was a lot of disappointment and a huge letdown that they didn't do more to try to bulk up the team in another way to get past Colorado in the first round, which they wound up losing. I'll never forget also another, unfortunately, a late Pavel Dimitra. I picked the Avalanche to win in six after the Wild won the division. I don't know if you remember this, Fallis. I walked into the locker room in Colorado, and he just let me have it. Avs in six, tried to make an example for me in front of the team, motivate them.
Yeah.
And then when the Wild lost in six, I did point that out to Pavel.
You nailed the games as well?
Yeah. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thoughts on today there, Joe? Obviously, we know how important this is to both teams. What are you expecting today at XL Energy Center?
12 games left. Got to win minimum of 9, and that's an absolute minimum. So you got to win today. You can't lose to the Blues. You look at this month. You play St. Louis 3 times. Right now, you have 1 point. If you end up with 3 points, okay. If you end up with 1 point or 2 points out of a possible 6 against a division rival within the span of 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it's been, like, it's just not good enough. And it'll be another stretch that we look at when this thing's all wrapped up and go, what could have been? So I expect the Wild to come out and play like that. They've won 4 in a row at home. St. Louis is not a great road team numbers-wise, and they're not a great first-period team, right? So I want to see Minnesota come out, establish the tempo of this game, jump all over St. Louis. They've only scored 6 goals in 3 games against the Blues, and that includes a win here in John Hines' first game on November the 28th. So get him Bennington's kitchen, rattle him. I'm assuming he's the starter, of course. Joel Hofer's actually been better on the road this year. But if it is Bennington, get in his cage, rattle him early.
Brian Hartman could do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Did it last year.
Well, and John Hines said it when we were in St. Louis a week ago. He said, we want to get in his kitchen earlier. You know, early in the game. And I didn't feel like they did it in St. Louis. So today's the day. Again, the Blues, first period, 6 most goals against, 6 worst goal differential in the first. Jump on St. Louis early. Set the tone of this hockey game. get the gosh darn 2 points, and then we can get a few days off for San Jose.
Sounds good. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Joe, we'll let you go and join Tom upstairs. Michael, thank you for your hour and 20 minutes here with us here. I know you want to go
hour,
watch the...
It felt 2:20.
2 hours. 2 hours
do,
and 20
do you think
minutes.
There's a chance that I wally-pipped...
It seemed like three.
Yeah, I know. You think there's a chance I wally-pipped Pip Micheletti?
Do you want that gig?
Yeah, I would work with you every day. What a dream.
Oh, my God. Well, we have to run it by Micheletti because he's the program director now. So
yeah, that's true.
Thanks for doing this, Michael. That was great. Elliot Friedman, everybody we had on, that was a lot of fun. So thank you for doing
anytime.
This. Anytime. All right, that is Michael Russo. Tom, you're going to hang with me. I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to come back up to you, and we're going to talk a little NHL in general. How's that sound?
Oh, joy.
Tom Reed from the Al Shaver Press Box. We'll jump on him next after a break. Thanks for listening to KFAN. In the home stretch of an elongated Beyond the Pond, and I guess you could almost call this now an extended pregame, that'll get underway at 12:45. Again, the puck will drop at 1:08 this afternoon as the Wild host the St. Louis Blues. Michael Russo on his way to the Al Shaver Press Box. Tom Reed is there, and we're here to take you the rest of the way. Thomas, you ready for this one? I know that every game's a big game, all that stuff, but... Man, we're down to the final 12 of this regular season already.
Yeah, you're right, Kevin. The thing is, Minnesota has 6 games in this building in a row. 6 of them. So this is a good time for Minnesota to really step up. They also, if you remember, the last 6 games, they have 5 of the 6 on the road. Their last game will be against Seattle on the 18th of April. But when you have 6 games in a row, you better make something happen. Of course, this one today, then they got San Jose and Vegas Golden Knights and Ottawa, Colorado, Winnipeg. They got some... easier games, I think, but they have some very tough competition also to face in the likes of Vegas Golden Knights, Colorado, and Winnipeg.
Looking at the out-of-town scoreboard, Islanders at home against the Winnipeg Jets. They're midway through the first, and the Islanders lead 2-0, Tom. They're taking on the Jets, and guess who's got both of those Islander goals? When we talk about former Wild players, how about Cal Clutterbuck, his 6th and 7th on the season to give the Islanders a big lead? We know how important this game is for the Wild and Blues today here in the West. The Islanders are, you know, hanging on by a thread there in the Eastern Conference as well.
Yeah, they're still there. And, of course, you have to win the games. If you're going to advance to the playoff picture, you've got to win a slew of games, especially at the end of the season. This is when it really gets tough. You know, you hit a wall in January, and it gets really be kind of the dog days of hockey, and the guys get tired. But all of a sudden, you have the break. You have the All-Star game, different things happening, and all of a sudden, you start to get into March. And I said, when it hits game number 20 remaining, that's when it really starts to speed up, and it's really speeding up here right now. Not too many games left for both of these teams, and the league coming to an end. So right now is the time for a lot of these teams to step up, get some points, and see if they can work their way back into a playoff picture.
How do you think Patrick Waugh is handling 6 straight losses by the Islanders? Yeah, they're off to a fast start today against the Jets, but 6 straight losses, and now they find themselves... 5 points out of the final wild card spot, and now held by the Red Wings.
You know what I've always said before: 5 points is a lot to make up in a month. So you've got to do it in a very shortened window if you're going to do it. Wouldn't it be fun to be around him when things aren't going well? I don't think he'd be a happy guy. That's for sure.
No, I think you're right. What do you make of the chase here in the Western Conference? We know that where the Wild are at as they try to scramble their way into the top 8. But when you look at the Central Division, led by the Avalanche, Stars, and the Jets, not a lot separating them, Tom.
No, there really isn't. And you know, but Minnesota just have to win their games. They can't worry about what the other teams are going to do. You have to worry about what you have. And even John Hines said that I can't worry about the players who aren't here. I can only worry about the players who are here that are going to compete. So let the chips fall where they may. But if our guys step up here and, him not having Hartman on the bench in that period, he's sending a message to everybody, not just to Hartman, but everybody on that team. If you don't compete, you're not going to play.
I'll tell you this much. When I saw the injury to Jonas Brodin the other night against when he was thrown down by Alex Killorn and the Anaheim Ducks, I thought that might be the end of the season for Jonas Brodin. Listening to John Hines after the game and then yesterday at practice, it sounds like there's hope that he could be back even by the next game. Probably not, definitely not today, but by the middle part of this week.
You know, he's one of those guys that they need. Minnesota, the biggest problem Minnesota's had all year long is the injury. I mean, it's been absolutely terrible. It started with Spurgeon. He's only played 16 games all year, and he's one of our top defensemen, obviously, out there. Then you have Brodin, who's been hurt. You've got, Jules Eriksson. Everybody on this team has gone through some major injuries. And not just one guy at a time. It's been compounded. Minnesota has two players only, who have played every game this year, and they're both rookies. They got Faber and Rossi. Everybody else is way down the list here. I look at the St. Louis Blues. They've got 11 players who have played either all or missed just one game all season long, and those guys are at the top of the list. I mean, they've been very fortunate. They have not had the injuries that Minnesota has had to endure, and it's been really tough on the players, the coaching staff, and the general manager. When you have this many injuries, how do you compensate for the lost time that these guys have playing?
Well, and it's not only the fact that they knew they were going to be up against it with the cap stuff that they put themselves into, but then what you can't account for is that you're going to get hit with injuries, significant injuries to significant players all season long. See, there's just no way to make up for that. You don't replace a Jared Spurgeon, you don't replace a Jules Eriksson, a Jonas Brodin. No club can withstand a hits like that.
And you're right. And you remember last year in the playoffs, look at Jules Eriksson, that guy broke his leg, came back, played one shift, what, 7 or 10 seconds, and that was it in the playoffs. He was done.
Yeah.
And you know what? And I've been around the game for a long time, Kevin. I don't remember a year where a team has had this many injuries and significant injuries that have kept their star players out of the lineup.
What does your spidey sense tell you about Jules Eriksson Ek today? Well, I know in listening to John Hines yesterday, listening to him, I got the feeling like there was a real strong possibility number 14 will be out there with the Wild today. What are you hearing or what are you feeling?
Well, I don't think so, but you never know what's going to happen and how they attack the injury and what they're able to do to get him comfortable. But Minnesota has 4 days off after today. Do you take that chance and bring him back and maybe re-injure it, or do you play this game and then get those 4 days off that to maybe hit a little more healing power in his leg?
That's tough, though, because yep. We know what's on the line here. They have to win. I mean, there's really no way around. You almost have to sweep the homestand.
Yes, you do. I mean, you really do. This team really has to step up here right now, and they've got to win some games in this building. You know, but playing at home is critical for every team to get points, and that's where Minnesota has captured 40 of their points this year. They've gone 18-12-4, but losing 16 games in this building does not sit too well, but we'll see if they can come up with a good start here and get 2 points tonight.
All right, Tom, if you hear anything else up there, give me a jingle. We'll come right back up to you, but thanks for stepping on.
All right, my pleasure. Thanks, Kevin.
That is Tom Reed upstairs in the Al Shaver press box helping us preview a little bit of what's going on here with the Wild and Blues at XL Energy Center. The pregame starts at 12:45. Puck drops at 1:08 right here on KFAN. Let's go back to the St. Louis Park studios. Brett Blakemore is there. Are you ready to go, Brett? I understand you're coming to the game today and you're going to take this one in person. Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm going to have to drive like a maniac on 94.
No, don't do that.
Over there.
Don't do that. You can listen to Joe and Tom.
Hey, for sure.
No need to drive like a maniac. Drive like a normally sane person.
Well, the 94 drop-off, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Be careful with that. I do have some extra. You just posed it to Tom, so I'll ask you. I mean, I'm looking at it right here on NHL.com. NHL buzz. Eriksson Ek could return for the Wild today against the Blues. What does your spidey sense say, Kevin?
No, I'm not going to do this without the music, without the open. Right. So let's go back
to the open.
Yeah, I want the whole works. I want the open. I want the sound effects. There it is.
Brett Blake Morris breakaway.
Yeah, man, if we're going to do it, we got to do it the right way. All right, so tell me again, what was your question?
Well, here, I'll even do this. There you go. So I'm looking at it right now. You just posed it to Tom, so I'll pose it to you. I'm looking at it. NHL buzz. It's a headline on NHL.com. Eriksson Ek could return for the Wild today against the Blues. It's looking likely. What does your spidey sense say, Kevin?
If you would have asked me even 5 minutes ago, I thought he was going to play today. But now I'm looking at Russo's feet, and he dashed those hopes. No Jules Eriksson Ek, but it will be Marc-Andre Fleury against Jordan Binnington. So while you don't have number 14, which really stinks, the dream is alive for a possible Fleury-Binnington bout at center ice. Maybe that dream can finally come true. But as far as Jules Eriksson Ek, not this day, but it sounds like it could be later in this homestand, which it very well could be the next game, earlier middle of this week.
One more light one on the Wild before we move on to other hockey-related things. If you could bring back one jersey from Minnesota Wild history to be a alternate jersey, which one would it be?
It's probably that inaugural one. Most people, I don't know how they feel about it, but I like the inaugural stuff. The early days of Wild. Now, I like their most recent iterations of these jerseys. I really love the road whites. I think they're sharp. I think they're spectacular. But yeah, I like the early stuff. I never really cared for the red one, but I'd go the early green.
I think the red one is the worst jersey in the history of Wild hockey. If it were me, I would bring back the script one that they wore around 14, 15, 16, the green. I thought that was a really sharp look, but I love the current iteration as well.
You know, the other one, I shouldn't probably say this, I was never really a fan of the stadium jersey ones either. Like, these new 78s, I think are awesome, and I've told this many times. I sit up in the press box and I'm watching the games, and I'm not comparing Brock Faber to Neil Broughton, but I see that number 7 out there, and in those jerseys, I think of Neil Broughton. I see the number 20. Again, I'm not comparing Pat Maroon to Dino Cicerelli, but that's the first thing that comes to my mind. 23, I think Brian Bell is. It's just fantastic to see those colors back out there. So those are my favorites. I was never a big fan, though, of the Stadium Series jerseys, but I don't know that I've been a favor of any of them that I've seen on any of the teams across the history of time.
Yeah, I was born in 96, so it does absolutely nothing for me. Was not alive when the North Stars were a thing. So
whatever, it's not about you, Brett.
Well, I'm just telling you what my opinion is. This is a hot topic, and I'm a little fired up about it. Tom Wilson was suspended six games by the NHL Department of Player Safety. He straight up baseball swung at someone's face with a stick.
Yeah.
I get it didn't hit the blade of his stick didn't hit his face, but still, that six games feels awfully light.
He didn't. I mean, when I think of a baseball swing, I think of a guy holding a stick in both hands and winding up and smashing him. Now, the way he had it is his arm was kind of around the guy, and he whipped his stick back so it hit him directly in the face. I think it's just as bad.
It's intentional.
100% intentional. He put his hips into it like a golf swing. I mean, just egregious. And, yeah, I would have liked to have seen more than six games. You can only push so far, but you know, you always wonder with Tom Wilson, what's next? Because he's one of those guys, and that's the question, what's next? But yeah, six seems a little light, but luckily he'll be out of the lineup for a while. And these are important games for the Washington Capitals. I was talking about how important it is for the Islanders, for the Wild, for the Blues. Those Washington Capitals, they need Tom Wilson. They're just a point back of the Detroit Red Wings. Nobody's taking a stranglehold of those final wildcard spots in the Eastern Conference, whether it be Detroit, Washington, or the Islanders. But that's going to be tough because he's a very valuable player on that team, and now he's going to be out for six games.
With the NC... Oh, hang on. Can't forget that.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know. I almost forgot that. That would have been bad. With the NCHC Frozen Faceoff coming, and obviously the Frozen Four coming here, which one of the Minnesota college teams do you think will go the furthest in the NCAA tournament?
Are you being a Richard?
No.
Because only one of them made it. The others have all been eliminated. So unless you're being a Richard and you're trying to reel people in, I'd like the Gophers to be the best, to go the furthest in as far as Minnesota college teams. In talking to Pat earlier too, you know, it's hit or miss with this team right now. They don't have a guy that can drive the blue line like a Brock Faber or a Jackson Lacombe, and that's going to be tough to overcome. I like Justin Close for the most part. I think he'll be great between the pipes for him. But is this team built like the team last year? I don't think they are. So they got to get some breaks along the way. But you asked the question, which Minnesota team will go the furthest? I can say with a fact, I think it'll be the Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Probably. I think you're right. You might be onto something.
One more, and I guess I got to get out of here.
Yeah, I think one more. McKinnon is on an absolute tear. His point streak is up to 17 games. The Avalanche have their eighth win in a row. They're absolutely rolling. This Central, is this as tough as the Central has ever been? At least on the top side, there's three really good teams there.
Yeah, the Central's had some pretty darn good teams. It just has the Chicago Blackhawks, and, you know, And that's back in the day when Colorado wasn't any good, and they had 48 points in an entire season. They literally bottomed out, and they were able to establish a bit of a dynasty there in the Mile High City. But, I mean, it's brutal up there. There's very little room for breathing. And as the best that can happen to any of those three teams is finish first, because whoever finishes second has to play the third-place team. And let's say it's Colorado and Winnipeg, or Colorado and Dallas, or Dallas and Winnipeg. Man, what a meat grinder that's going to be to get out of that first round. That ain't going
to
be easy.
Are you willing to pick it in Toronto or New York to get the 1-8 playoff seeding? Because I think having the 2 and the 3, especially with these top three in the Central, I think that's almost criminal.
Yeah,
to make them play in the first
round. I mean, it makes for interesting hockey. There's no doubt about it, but it just doesn't seem fair that you go all that time to finish it and you end up finishing second in the division. You got to face the third place team. That just doesn't seem right. And like Russo was saying out there in the Eastern Conference, Toronto's probably going to face off against the Florida Panthers. Ouch! That's your first round matchup? That just doesn't seem fair. So that's my 2 cents. I would like to see it go back to 1-8. I don't think it'll ever go 1-16, and I don't want that either. But yeah, I think it would be great to see it go 1-8, but I don't know. It makes for interesting hockey, that's for sure, but man, it just doesn't seem right. Brett, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, no problem.
That was fun, wasn't it? Having Russo in here for 2.5 hours?
No, he wasn't as mean to me as I thought he might be. So I was a little worried about that, but we got through it.
Think about all the what this journey was. Starting at 10 o'clock, we went to Bemidji. We talked to Pat Micheletti and Ben Holding, making their way back via car, driving together from the CCHA championship game. We had Elliot Friedman on from up north, up there in Canada. We had Matt Hendricks. We had Marcus Foligno. Started the show with Marcus Foligno, and then, of course, we had Joe and Tom on from the Al Shaver Press Box. Lots of good stuff. Even Brett Blakemore's breakaways were more than adequate today. I thought you did a great job, Brett, and I wouldn't even have to give you a hug on this day.
That could be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you look at it.
Yes, it depends on what you're hoping for. Right. Anyway, that's Brett Blakemore. For Michael Russo, I'm Kevin Faulness. Don't go anywhere. We got the Minnesota Wild pregame right around the corner. Puck drops at 109 as the Wild host the St. Louis Blues. Thanks for listening. This has been Beyond the Pond.